Hi, everyone, and good morning. Welcome to More Than Milestones, where we are here to help you boot your worry, be confident, and have a blast raising your happy baby. I'm your host, Dr. Wendy McKenna, and I'm so excited to be able to introduce to you my friend and colleague, Abby Bordner. Abby, thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so excited to talk to you more.
Awesome. Well, we're going to just dive right in. So Abby, why don't you just introduce yourself, tell a little bit of your backstory and tell people where you are today and how you're serving this awesome population of amazing mamas.
Well, it's been a long journey. I feel like it started probably when I was a child and I knew that I would always be a mom myself and that I was drawn to that as I grew older and had my first child at 27 and my second one 4.5 years later. And during that time, my career and my professional interests started to really mirror my personal life. And so the year after I had my first child, I studied to be a doula and I started attending births as a certified doula and went to over 200 births as a doula, labor support doula. And then I got my certification as a lactation consultant and childbirth educator and postpartum doula. So I have kind of that whole gamut of certifications that kind of one year after the next, I just kept pursuing it more. I love the work. I love working with moms in pregnancy and families during birth, as well as my kids started growing, I was writing a parenting blog and doing parenting support, teaching parenting classes. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of people in my community that I've kind of traveled this journey with.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I think it's really one of the most special things about doing this work is that you're intimately involved with your clients and that these become friends and people I run into at the grocery store and see the kids growing. And so that's really what brought me into being a professional in family services. And now I'm consulting and training in pregnancy, birth, and early childhood. So in Santa Fe, I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I do travel a little bit out of state and I've spoken at a few conferences, but mostly I do doula trainings for CAPA here in the state of New Mexico. And I really love training doulas and training in the topics of pregnancy and birth. And I have a blog on my website for pregnancy information and early childhood, infant bonding and attaching and breastfeeding. All of it is just kind of what I've dedicated my life to at this point. And so my kids are now 18 and almost 14. And
yeah, fast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just, it's kind of the journey that never gets boring. No. There's always something new to learn and to teach and to be present with. So I've really been fortunate. I think in my career, I have a real passion for what I do. And also my personal life has benefited so much from all that I've learned.
Oh, absolutely. No, I know. I know that my kids have just opened up my world to all sorts of new learning. It's your second chance to learn all over again and to really be that lifelong learner that a lot of us always say that we want to be, and know that it's an incredible journey. It can be a messy journey.
Right.
It is amazing. So speaking of journeys, I know that you are studying very hard on this idea of the spiritual journey. Can you dive into that and let us know what that is all about?
Yeah, you know, after having attended so many births and been through it myself twice, I feel like sometimes women get caught up in the medical story of their birth, and that becomes kind of the public story, and the social story is what happened medically from start to finish. And I've seen birth unfold in so many different ways. And the vast majority of the births I attended as a doula are in a hospital setting. And so I've seen the whole gamut from short, fast, natural, unmedicated to C-section, the complications to intense, unexpected events. And it just seems like such a powerful experience in our lives that I wanted to shift my focus away from the medical events, and because I've seen that really become part of a woman's personal story and her beliefs about herself. And I see it as such a much broader experience. And it's one of, you know, we only experience it a few times in our life. And it's one of those pivotal moments where we have the transformation, some type of transformation occurs, kind of the hero's journey is something I'm really interested in. And I've heard some great people speak recently. Pam England just finished a book about the hero's journey and birth in that template. And I just heard Dr. Sean Tassone talk about it at a conference. And so I really am intrigued in this idea, because the hero's journey is just the rite of passage. It's not only birth, but it's any rite of passage. So it's any time that you really transform yourself into another person from start to finish. And part of the underworld is the death of the old self and the birth of the new self. And whenever you're in the underworld, you know, in mythology, there's uncertainty and fear and doubt and hesitation. And the idea of using the hero's journey as a guide for women in birth is that when you travel in the underworld, there's these archetypes, these kind of historic figures that offer some light or guidepost of wisdom and emotional security in that time of despair. And so when you look at the journey of birth, the archetypes can be something like the mother. The mother archetype is not necessarily your own mother or yourself as a mother, but it's the everything that the energy of mother embodies. And for the archetypal characteristics are nurturing, protecting, unconditional love and acceptance. Like the ultimate mother energy is like, no matter what, you are absolutely loved. It's the way we feel about our children, right? And there's times in birth that women need that energy. There's also the warrior, that you have to call upon the warrior. And the, you know, the most sacred characteristics of a warrior are steadfast and strong and able to endure, and not just endure pain, but endure challenge, other challenges that might come up during labor, acceptance of a change in your birth plan. So sometimes the warrior really needs to be ignited for a woman during her birth experience. And then there's a few other really pivotal archetypes. And then the end of the journey, hero's journey, is this returning to the world. Mm-hmm. After you give birth, the death of yourself as a maiden becomes a mother, the birth of your new baby. And then the returning into the world is another huge transformation, which means, how do you integrate your experience of transformation and your experience giving birth? How do you then become the person that you are that's different than who you were before? Yeah. And there's a lot. I really think that the postpartum time is an important time for moms in integrating her birth story into what she believes about herself and how that relationship starts to bloom between her and her child. And we're seeing, you know, more cases of what's being called birth trauma now, that women actually can suffer PTSD from their birth experience. And so we really want to protect that experience and help moms who it might not be classic postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety, but actual PTSD symptoms, which look a little different. And so, you know, that's been my quest, I think, is to kind of explore this idea that birth has so many layers and so much meaning for women, and how we can understand it and face the journey in a hero's way.
No, I love that, because stories, they tell so much. I mean, and like you said, you know, there's the superficial story, but then, you know, you get under and you understand more and you understand more. But really, can you help us right now? How do you get beyond just the superficial story? And how do you help mamas in the postpartum period really connect with themselves in this new role that they have?
That's a really good question. It's a process, and every woman does it differently. I think that I love postpartum doula work, because it's really about kind of being available and holding space for her journey as a becoming postpartum, becoming mother. It's really so different. So that's not the same thing for every person, but if you perhaps have a family member or a friend who's planning to have a baby or has had a baby, sometimes the most nurturing, loving thing we can offer is just space and silence and being available, being fully present. And if it's good, then it's good. And if it's bad, you can hold that space. A lot of women are kind of told, oh, at least you have a healthy baby. So, you know, like dry your tears and pull it together, because we don't want to hear what else happened for you, you know? And I think that's kind of the overwhelming encouragement she'll get, is to kind of like put that away now and become a mom, because this is supposed to be the happiest time of your life. And, you know, I remember feeling really bad that there were days that I didn't feel like it was the happiest time of my life.
Yeah, no kidding. And helping people be able to get through that without the judgment.
Right.
So important. So if people have a postpartum doula, that's awesome, right?
Mm-hmm. For that support. Yeah.
But if they don't, do you help moms kind of set up a support system, and what they're going to need for that space to actually even be able to happen?
Yeah. You know, I think it can be done. It's really a time, I think, as mothers, we need to realize that asking for help and weaving the web of our community is so important, especially at this point in our life. Like, we're having kids. We have so many demands that having a community makes a huge difference. And so I think if you know, I've heard of a lot of great baby showers or even mother blessing parties, which are really about celebrating mom's journey, not just celebrating the baby, but people that will come together to bring food, there's an app, a meal train app. You can have people sign up to drop food off, and you can write your preferences. And my friend just put a cooler out in front of her front door, so she didn't necessarily have to take visitors every time someone was dropping off food. And, you know, I think being able to really focus on taking care of the baby, and also having emotional support, I think is really important. Like, it's nice to have logistical help. And if you feel like, oh, my mother-in-law is so great, she'll clean the house, she'll cook food, but you also really want to take care of your emotional needs by saying, you know, who could I talk to, and where can I find like the space to cry when it's time to cry, and where can I ask questions and be in pain and be happy and all of those things. And so you really want to consider who are the people that can offer you that, not just, you know, the friends who want to hold the baby, or the relatives who just want you to entertain them, you know,
right,
to
ask, right. Now, it's not as much help as
right.
That's funny. So but in turn, and I just lost my train of thought, in terms of the emotional support, I think we all, unless we know ourselves well enough ahead of time, we all hope for that fall in love with at first sight, and the joy and everything that comes after that's good. And so when we find ourselves in this space of not feeling so good, or feeling a little bit alone, or feeling kind of even in crisis mode, it's so much better to have this in place beforehand, you know, because
right.
A lot of us end up looking and reaching out when we're in this panicked state of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So think about preparing for the crisis,
like you right.
do, you know, like an earthquake drill or a fire drill. You have to, you know, prepare ahead of time so that you know what to do. And I think that is, there's just so much to think about and so much to research about the things that you want to have happen, that there's almost not enough time or space to kind of think about, well, how do I put something together if it doesn't go to plan? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it seems like planning for birth is kind of an oxymoron in my opinion, because it's like a lot of couples will go to 6 weeks of classes and they'll talk about the birth and they'll read the books, and then they stop at the birth, you know, then they're like, oh yeah, then we forgot to imagine what we might need after the baby's born. And I think your time is better spent planning for your postpartum than planning for your birth. I mean, assuming you have good information, good support, you trust your doctors, then you don't really need to read every single book, and you don't need to go on the website searching birth complications. You kind of just need to practice your breathing and get out and walk every day and build your confidence and your team of people that can support you. And that's why I think a labor doula is really important for that, because it's just someone who brings all that knowledge right to the moment. You don't have to learn it and remember it. And, you know, it saves a lot of time and energy. And then you can both be more, you and your partner can be more present with the birth and know that you have that resource immediately if you need to ask a question. But planning for the postpartum, absolutely. And I just think basic needs, plan about food, plan sleep, plan support, you know, chores, walking the dog. And I have some people, some my couples in classes do like a task sheet where you write down everything you do in a week or a month, and then you figure out, can I delegate that to someone else? Can I just postpone it and do it later? Or can I just do it less well? Can I do it in a maybe a modified way where I only do it once a week or I only clean a little bit? And then you kind of try to prepare like you're going to be on vacation for a month. Hopefully it'll feel like that. But, you know, you want to ask your neighbor to put your trash in and out for the month. You want to get your dog walked or things like that, that you'll eventually reintegrate into your life, but you're better off being over planning that stuff. You may have days where you feel like, well, I don't need all this help, but there's going to be days that you really look forward to someone showing up to drop off some food and you really need it. So it's a nice time. It's again about building community. I mean, people are so happy to be involved in this time of your life too. It's not a bother to people. And if it's our first lesson and going, sure, okay, I guess you can bring over food and I guess you can walk the dog for me, then all the better, because you know you'll eventually be doing it for somebody else and it all comes around and goes around. And you're better off having a big support network than trying to isolate and say, I got this, I can do it by myself.
Well, culturally, we just have such strong values for this thing called independence. And it's just so counter to how we're supposed to raise our babies, and our families, which is in a village. And yes, you can be independent within the village, but you still need the village surrounding you and having that support. And I know for me personally, just asking for help is really hard. It's hard. And I think it's harder than to for a lot of people. And when they're forced with that decision to, do I ask for help or not, you hesitate and you're like, no, I got this. And, you know, my sister was prime example. You know, it was her second, and she's like, no, I'm good. I'm totally good. Like, I'm on top of it. I'm getting everything done. And I'm like, you are going to hit a wall. You can do this for so long until it's just like, you ask for help. I mean, I love that you said that, because it's so imperative that we just kind of drop the idea that we are super parents, they're super mama, and that means that we do it by ourselves. We are super mama, and it means we reach out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it creates this really nice flow where it's like, oh, can you pick up my kids? I have to run to that meeting, and I'll grab that for you. And it's never, you know, our biggest fear that we're just take. Yeah. But the truth is, it creates such a nice flow. And when you may have times where you're helping more than you need help, but then you know the minute you are sick and the kids are sick and you're home in bed that somebody's bringing food. And that just, it's so nice to feel taken care of like that.
Yeah, no, it's really important. And it really solidifies, like you said, that village and the community, because if you don't accept the help, then the community is not going to be there for you either. Mm-hmm. And because they're not going to feel like they can trust you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it goes.
Yeah, it builds intimacy, really. I think asking for help makes it life feel more connected and more real. And ultimately, you're being more intimate with the people that care about you.
Absolutely. So I noticed that at the beginning you said that you were also a lactation consultant as well. And I know that that's definitely one of the things in the postpartum period that mamas plan on, a lot of them plan on, I want to breastfeed. So can you talk a little bit about how breastfeeding can, you know, be a positive thing and potentially even a negative thing in that postpartum period?
Yeah, you know, it's such a fragile time anyway, as you're coming out of birth, you've traveled through the underworld of doubt and fear and disorientation, and then you're physically having pain after you have the baby and you're exhausted, maybe you haven't slept in a long time. My goal for every mom is that if she wants to breastfeed, that it becomes a very, again, supported. The best way to have successful breastfeeding is to have like people watching and giving information in those first few days, because sometimes it's just reassurance. And I've done home visiting for a nonprofit that everyone got breastfeeding support at home. And sometimes it's just telling a mom, oh my God, that's exactly what's supposed to happen. I know it's kind of weird, right? Or that feels funny. Or And they go, oh, really? Oh my gosh, look at how good he's doing. Okay, great. And I come back in the next day or 2 days later and they're just, you know, doing great. And other times there's a lot of guilt or shame. I think some moms will hang their, you know, their valor on their birth experience, and some will hang it on their breastfeeding experience. And it's just too vulnerable to say there's a right or wrong way or that you're good or bad at it. But I do love to see a mom who really wants to breastfeed figure out how to do that. And it's not that hard for a lot of moms. And that 1-3 day postpartum checkup with a lactation consultant means the world, because if things aren't going well at that point, you can pretty quickly turn it around. If it's just a position or latch problem, which is the majority of those early pain or problems with milk supply. And so I think that early intervention is really helpful. And I think that there's just a lot of conflicting information, and, you know, you go to your pediatrician and they're like, he has to eat. So you just give him a bottle, and then your mother-in-law might say this, or your sister. So there's a lot of pressure, and you're also feeling like this huge responsibility. I have to like feed this child, so I better do a good job, because
it's my job to keep him alive.
Right. Right.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's just lots of different conflicting ideas and views about it. And they say a woman has essentially decided whether or not she'll breastfeed by the time she's about 20 weeks pregnant, about halfway through her pregnancy, before she's even showing. And a lot of that decision has to do with the input she's received and the support she imagines that she'll need, or what she's, you know, her level of that independent value, where it's like, oh, it's too dependent to have a baby that needs to eat off my breast every 2 hours or more. So it's just an interesting exploration. Again, I think of all of your unconscious preparation for this work, and then what you've consciously taken and how that comes together in your experience. And it's breastfeeding can be a challenge and a kind of a point of sadness for moms. I think it can contribute to depression if it's not going well and she really wanted to breastfeed. So I've seen it, and it kind of just impacts that very fragile postpartum time. And again, support, support, support. I can't say it enough, from somebody that you trust and that has good information.
Yeah, no, it's so important. And I just remember the first time when I was my first baby in the hospital, and I was like, you know, well, it's natural. I'm supposed to be able to do this. And it was like, wait a minute, how do I do this? And where do I put the baby? And where do I, you know, and the hard thing was that every nurse that came in on every different shift had a different way to do it. And it made me feel like, well, did she do it wrong? Who do I trust? I don't know what to do, you know? And then it just kept exacerbating the problem. So I think, you know, from the get-go, you already said it, getting the lactation consultant in and having that one person to help you get through some of the problems, rather than the shift nurse that is going to change.
Right, right. That's true. And I think taking a, you know, a breastfeeding class ahead of time can help just prepare you with the information that's fairly basic, and you can, what to expect in the first few days. And, you know, if you have that, or even, you know, they say that if a woman just sees another baby breastfeeding, that it will be easier for her. And so it could just be your sister who has a baby that she's breastfeeding, or it could be that WIC does a lot of their breastfeeding support with what they call peer counselors, and they're just women who have breastfed. And so it's not even like you have to have some specialized information, although the lactation consultants are prepared to really address everything, all aspects of what's going on. But in a more simple context, and back in the day when there was no lactation consultants, it was really other breastfeeding women that showed you how to do it.
Yeah. And I know in most areas, there are a ton of breastfeeding support groups once baby's born. Mm-hmm. So again, what you talked about earlier is spending more time during your pregnancy preparing for the postpartum period, you know, maybe as a pregnant mama, just going in and sitting in on some of these breastfeeding circles to
Right. Get
on with the other mamas and the babies and to see and watch. I think that's a really great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in a place where she can really just kind of, without feeling like she's being nosy, but she can just actually watch what she does when she gets the baby up, what happens, how the baby relaxes while they're feeding, all of those visual cues are much more accessible for her in postpartum. They also say the brain chemistry changes so much postpartum that it's a hard time to take in a lot of information, that you're actually kind of, your brain is more in this primal attachment and bonding chemistry that means you just kind of want to stare at your baby and be fascinated with your baby. And someone's trying to say, well, that chemical change in the brain is heightened in the like 36 hours after birth, but I'm sure it has some lingering effect that happens that makes us, as moms, have a tendency to get distracted or not remember things.
Oh gosh, mama brain, I still have that. I think I get to use that as an excuse for pretty much anything now.
Right. Right. Anything I'm experiencing is postpartum, even though it was 14 years
ago. I'm still postpartum. Right. Time's going.
Postpartum emotions, postpartum weight.
Yes, all of that. No, I think it's so important, and the theme of just getting that support ahead of time and getting your village together and spending the time when you have it and you're absorbing all the information about pregnancy and birth to actually spend the time on what you're going to need afterwards is just essential.
And over plan it. I mean, just allow yourself to over plan it, because it may be exactly what you needed.
Yeah. And delegating out, you know, I know for me, I had this weird thought that I would have all this extra time. Yes. You know, I'm not at work. I'm not seeing clients. The baby's going to sleep for 18 hours a day. Like, what am I going to do? Right. And I really had this expectation that I was going to be very productive during this time. And that did not happen. And then I was like, well, why didn't that happen? And then so I started this story of like guilting myself into, well, I had 18 hours of baby sleeping. Like, why couldn't I get an ounce right. done? Like, oh my gosh, this was not the right way to think, you know?
Right. Well, and I think we go into it thinking our work life is always like we work for a certain number of hours and we can check things off our to-do list. And then we get a paycheck every now and then that makes you even feel more productive. Yeah. And then as a new mom, you're just kind of going in this loop where there's nothing being accomplished. I mean, you're doing a lot,
but you know, it's a different,
in your normal like scale of measurements of accomplishments, it's not really ranking very well.
No, I know. And I just remember at the end of the day going, what did I do today besides like feed the baby, burp the baby, change the baby, you know? And then for me, just being able to switch that story around is I'm creating a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a special time. And it doesn't really fit into a template of something you understand ahead of time where it's like, oh, I can, you know, fraction up my time in this way and I can get this kind of thing done. It's just a different scale.
Yeah.
Entirely.
Amazing. And that's the space that I'm in, is helping mamas understand their babies, you know, more so that they can make that connection earlier on. And so everything can be more joyful and fun. And, you know, after my first one, I figured it out for my own self too.
Yeah.
I did it professionally for many, many years. And then I did it with, and then when I had my first baby, it was like all of that knowledge out the window.
Right. I mean,
you're in headlights. It's like, why am I the one not figuring it out? You know?
It's true. It's true. Even if you have the information, it's a different experience when it's your own.
It is. It absolutely is. Well, Abby, it was so fun to get to know you.
I know. It was great. Thank you.
And so we're coming to an end, but how can people get in touch with you?
My abbybordner.com is my website. I have my doula trainings on there and my blog about birth. I also have a childbirth preparation journal that I wrote that's available for sale on the website. I also have my parenting blog and parenting support at relationshipbasedparenting.com. And that is some of the work I've done in the last 4 or 5 years for families and parents looking at the developmental process and the relationship, like you just said, that how important that relationship is in parenting.
Oh, I love it. And we'll have those links for you guys underneath here. But before we go, any final thoughts that you want to leave with our audience?
You know, I think it was just something you said about you're building a relationship and how important that is. And that's just, now that my kids are teenagers, I feel like the little things that I stressed about when my kids were young, if you just keep investing in the relationship in a place where it feels good, that you really can't go wrong. You won't look back and regret your choices as a parent. So I think that's what I'd like to leave you with.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you for that.
Sure.
Well, thank you again, Abby, for being here. And thank you, audience, for joining us today for another day of More Than Milestones. I hope you all have a beautiful day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.